Okay, I welcome all of you to English Dhamma discussion. So I am taking after a long time. So any particular verse that we were discussing? Actually, we were discussing Tuataka Sutta. I hope Bhante Dhammaji didn't complete it. We are in between, right? The middle of something.
Yes, Swaminatha, we're almost to the end of this sutta.
Right.
Last time we completed verse 930 of the Bhikkhu Bodhi. And I could read that one if you would like to know what that is.
You can't remember the Pali verse, right?
No, I don't know the Pali verse. So.
Okay. Maybe you can read the translation, then I can try to pick it.
Yes. Well, last week we did a bhikkhu should not be boastful and he should not utter insinuating speech. He should not train himself in impudence. He should not utter contentious talk. So we completed that verse. We're ready for the next one.
Mosavajje na niyetha sampajano sathani na kaira ata jivite na panyaya silabbate na nanya mati manye mosavajje na niyetha sampajano sathani na kaira ata jivite na panyaya silabbate na nanya mati manye. So the Sinhala translation goes like this. Samyak prajñāyati mahana musavābinīmehi noyadenneya kapatikam nokaranneya yali divipayatmin prajñāyen ha śīla vratayen anyayan ikmavā nositanneya. Okay. So I try to translate according to the Pali as well as from the Sinhala translation. So the one who is having proper wisdom, he is not involved with any kind of false speech, and then doesn't do any kind of cunning activities, and using his own life, who is developing wisdom and as well as the morality, he does not think exceeding others, so kind of suppressing others, comparing others and putting himself up and looking down the others, so he doesn't do something like that. So maybe there may be some better translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi, maybe Buddharakita Asma can continue.
Okay, so he should not be led into false speech, nor should he deliberately do anything deceptive. Because of his way of life, his wisdom, or his good behavior and observances, he should not despise another.
So when you were actually talking this, what came to my mind is that there's a very interesting sutta called Aryavamsa Sutta. Can you remember Aryavamsa Sutta? So Aryavamsa Sutta is very, very important sutta. It's one of the themes of the whole Buddha Sasana. And there Buddha actually mentioned about four we can say principles, and they are maybe so he Buddha points out, so this particular point that when one is involved with some kind of very good morality or very good even meditation, maybe various austere practices, he does not, as a result of that, he does not look down the others while keeping himself up. So this is a very interesting point, because when we are doing something better, so we may start, appreciating that, and we start sort of having kind of a proud about it. And as a result of that, we automatically start looking down the others who are not capable of doing that or who are neglectful about it. And such kind of thing can happen. So that is something usually even happening, and typically so it can happen within the monks, it can happen within the nuns, it can happen within the yogis. So assume that you are a good yogi, a meditator, and others are lacking that, and they are wasting their time or sleeping and all these things. So we compare ourselves with the other person, and we put ourselves in up and the others in the lower position, and as a result of that we may get a kind of a bad feeling about them and we want to expel them or we want to look down them or to blame them, so complain them. So all these things can happen. So if we can accommodate them, can we? Yeah, can we accommodate them? Can we have some sympathy on them? Are we going to embrace them or are we going to take to their side? So these are, I mean, difficult situations. So sometimes we have to strict. Sometimes we have to ask them to, you know, uplift their morale. And on the other hand, how about the pride arising in us and the conceit arising in us? So that also can be a hindrance. So when we are doing something good and we can get a kind of a praise from the others and others are appreciating that, as a result of that, I am becoming, you know, sullen kind of this thing, pride about it, proud about it. And as a result of that, so typically, so I start looking down the others. So this is typically happening, and this is again and again highlighted in this sutta. I'll just read that little part again and again highlighted in this Aryavamsa Sutta. So Buddha says, there are four policies mentioned there, principles mentioned there, and there each and every part Buddha mentioned, Thayacha, I am just one. The first one is, he is using whatever the requisites he has received, the robes what he has received, and Buddha mentioned, Thayacha pana itari itara chivara santuttya, nevattanu kanseti no parang vambheti. So this is a very, we sometimes miss this point. We like to see the good side, we like to see the bad side. But by comparison, what happens to us? So that is typically we are missing. So that is highlighted here. I mean, we are now in this case, he's a person who is careful about his robes. Whatever he receives, he is properly using them. And he is not doing anything wrong in order to get good robes. And when he received, he is carefully using them and contemplate when he is using, and he know the purpose, what is the why the robes are available. And so likewise, he is very careful in doing the whole thing when he is using the robes. Now he is a good person, a good monk, but using which, now Buddha mention itari itara chivarena thayachapana itari itara chivara santuttya nevattanukkanseti no parangvambheti. So because of his own good conduct, he does not put himself up and does not disparage the others. So he again and again repeats this to everything. So very very same thing here Buddha also highlights. Mosavajjena niyeta sampajano sathani na kaira atajivitena panyaya silabbatena nanya mati manye. Now, not only wisdom, even the sila, whatever other good qualities, using which he is not being conceited and looking down the others. So, this is something I thought of, I mean, immediately struck my mind. Anything, Bhante, you can contribute?
So, I'll just repeat this one again in a different English translation, because this different translation emphasizes something, an aspect of this verse. He would not pass time in falsehood. He would not conscientiously do treacherous things. Nor would he despise another because of his way of life, wisdom, or vows, and virtuous contact or virtuous conduct. So there's two aspects to this verse. On the one hand, he's not doing anything bad. And it's deliberately. He does not deliberately do deceptive things. And then on the other hand, he doesn't despise others because of his good actions. So again, it's pointing to the middle way. You're not somebody who will just say excels in the bad, and you don't take pride in your exemplary behavior. So it's threading this middle way that like it's normal. In a way, you excel in normal behavior.
What is necessary. Yeah. He's just doing what is necessary.
Yeah, that's what's really striking me here is this. He's talking about the extremes, but he's actually pointing to the middle way, and it's It's a very natural thing that in every instant, whenever we meet another person, if you're really mindful, you'll always know that you're gauging the other person, you're measuring the other person, and you're making a determination, I'm superior or I'm inferior to the other person. And if you're really mindful, you know this, and it's every day the same person. You know, you make a judgment, you make a criticism, or you give yourself a plus point. I'm very good. I'm very on time. I'm very proper. I did that well. Or that person's a creep. Or you make a negative mark, and it's instant. It's instant. It's astonishing, and we don't value this sort of normalcy. Like, it's enough. That other person's behavior is enough. What I'm doing is enough. We're always so sensitive to our status, to our actions. Like, do I look proper? Or, you know, and it's this self-deceiving, false speech to ourself. Always, we're always doing this. So you can be false good and false bad, where you're assessing yourself. And the one I remember always is like, okay, Atta, you know, I am not superior, I am not inferior, but also I am not the same. And then what the Arahants would say when they were enlightened was, this is different. You know, the only correct perception is, this is different. Not, this is the same, this is equal, this is superior, or this is inferior. So this aspect of Atta, you know, this idea of self, is manifesting as shame. And if you can have mastery over shame, in my own case, I remember I was hunting for shame. I was looking for shame whenever. And the funny time was I experienced this when I was being put down by another monk. And this monk was kind of scolding me, like he was very dismissive of me, and he was exemplary of himself, and I was like, I wanted to really understand shame, and I was like, oh, okay, thank you, because I really felt diminished by him. I really felt like crushed by him, and shame is crushing. You feel. Really crushed, you feel oppressed, your shoulders drop, your chest can go in, you know, you feel like miserable, like, and this other guy was crushing me, but I was really interested and looking for shame. I was actively, I want to understand shame and how it's impacting my life. And in that moment I could be very mindful of that experience of being crushed by shame and my own judgment, you know. And he was not a kind person to me in that moment, but I was taking those words into my own heart, and I was what I was doing with that was what was the damage to myself. And then I was like, oh, okay, now I've got shame. Now I can take the signal from shame every time that I'm with other people. Am I judging myself? Am I allowing their judgment of me to, you know, affect me? And I take my guidance from shame. Shame is my voice in my mind, in my heart, to understand this dynamic. And once shame is going, once shame is very active in a group, it can be very contagious. It's very nasty, and you can really see it. Like, I always, you know, I spend a lot of time with Sri Lankans, so there can be, especially overseas, you can get this like Sri Lankan nationalism. We're really proud to be Sri Lankans. These pseudo people that we have to live with to make our money. they don't know the proper way. They look down on us because we eat with our hands, but we like our rice and curry, and they think that we're savages because we eat, and it's very dirty to eat with your hands. And all this kind of crazy, I call it Sri Lankan nationalism. Like they come together and they're having a Buddhist gathering, and it's like, we're the superior people. Those white people are completely, they don't know the truth, and it gets really like the banners, you see the flags and the whole thing, and it's very,
it's common to any national.
Absolutely every nation.
Every nation.
Oh my God, every nation.
They are proud of their own nation.
With Irish, it's St. Patrick's Day, and we have to wear green, and everything is green, and we go around like we're acting like fools, but we're proud fools. It's like, oh my God, every nation has this thing, but it's shame. It's shame is driving it, and it's this like we're superior and they're inferior, and but finding this middle way, threading that needle, and realizing it's instantaneously there every single encounter that we have with another person. To get a handle on that is that mindfulness in every moment, and it's astonishing. Once I could do this, I could do this all the shame is very powerful. Like it's astonishing how it can strangle you and defeat you. But I take it as a lesson learned. I'll meet somebody and they're just, I don't know what it is about them. They have some special superpower of shame. And
is it the shame proper term, or kind of conceit, kind of proud?
No. They come together. As soon as there's conceitedness, as soon as there's that assessment of the other, instantly the shadow of that is shame. Just like if you see a threat, there can be anxiety and fear and anger. And what I was really looking at was that sometimes I feel very angry with somebody, right? They're very annoying. And what I missed was before that there was fear, and before that there was shame. There was an assessment that this person is more powerful than me in some way, and they're putting me down. And so this would very quickly happen, and I would be feeling annoyed. So when I feel these protective emotions, let's not call them negative, protective, then I'm very on guard. Like, oh, what is it about this person that is threatening me? Like, why do I perceive myself as better than them or inferior to them? So then I look very simplistically. So that's why when I see this verse immediately, I said to you, I see the extremes. But the Buddha is pointing the middle way. Like, so it's not explicitly in this verse, the middle way, but that's why I say, because you can't, it's not so easy to find that middle way, but it is if you look at the extremes. Like, I feel inferior around this person, or I feel superior around this person. Their behavior is bad behavior. My behavior is better behavior. And then, of course, as monks, we can really tend to this, like, I'm superior in that way. But in my own tendency, I have a strong tendency towards feeling an inferiority, that I criticize myself, I'm not doing good enough, or I'm not a real monk, I'm not a born in Sri Lanka monk, like, gee, those guys are perfect, they've got it all, they were born, I eat with my hands very messy, I can never eat like, it's like very messy. I see these monks and not even the tip of their finger is dirty from eating the food. It's like magic. And I'm like eating it and it's like a pig. I can never do this. It's inferior, I can never wear the robes properly. I can, some people, you see these monks who have been ordained since they were childhood. Like the robe is like magically sticking onto them, and they're effortlessly graceful and they have this particular language and way about them, and they never put a foot wrong. I'm like awkward, and you know, it took me years to sit even cross-legged, and I can never sit in lotus. Like, I'm just telling you, I have all this crazy list of I am inferiors going on, right? So I'm judging my own behavior and observances, and I am despising myself. So when we despise others, that's easy. It's how do we see the despising ourself? That's hard. So take the lesson. You know, when you have it with somebody else, like somebody was asking me recently about the behavior of somebody in this monastery, and I said, they said to me, how do I see it? I said, I see it as funny. And they were said, oh, I was so annoyed with that person. And I said, yeah, I know he's very annoying to everybody else, but I think that that's really funny too. And I said, he's got this real ability to annoy everybody. Everybody's going to get super annoyed. He is magic at this. And I said, you've got to watch it. You've got to watch the show here. Like, you've got to watch the show because, like, it comes back to this verse that we're all judging, we're all assessing, and we're all feeling this superiority or inferior instantaneously. We can feel it as a group. We can feel it as an individual. It's astonishing. So... yeah, anyway, these are some thoughts about this. I'd be happy to hear what other people have to say.
Sure. Thank you, Swaminanda, for your expounding the Dhamma to us, and Taro for your experiences and in being a monk for so long and seeing things. So I just wanted to come back to the verse, and I just... was noticing seems, well, of course the Buddha knew human beings, and you know, sila is our first, you know, the first thing to help us enter into the path and to practice. And it's interesting here how he talks about wisdom and morality, sort of how they interact, you know, because, you know, as our Venerable Taro explained to us that because of our wisdom, we can tend to, as soon as we have some wisdom and some good practices that we're doing, here our morality drops down and we begin to despise others. So the Buddha surely saw that in people, and so the whole Eightfold Noble Path is set up to work on our morality, our wisdom, and our practice of meditation. So if we are continually coming back to our own practice, then that's a sort of a safeguard. You know, as soon as we see that we're despising somebody, I guess, you know, just keeping a mindfulness how we're putting others down, or how we're giving ourselves too much, you know, like making ourselves special, then that's a sure sign that we've fallen off the path and we need to come back to mindfulness of wisdom, which is seeing the no self, the suffering, and the changing nature of all things, and to come back to the present moment and experiencing things as they truly are, which is without there's no separation. If we see all things as just fundamental nature of things, so there's nobody better than the other, and then we're safe. We're not suffering, because as soon as we are beginning to put somebody else down or raise ourselves up, there's a lot of suffering in that, and we can't progress in our practice that way. So this whole verse, just for me, that's what comes up for me.
Yeah, actually, another point, this sampajano. Sampajano satani na kaira. Now, this is a very interesting way of putting it. Now, when we are developing wisdom, and it may have developed certain critical abilities, so you can think carefully, you can analyze the situation, and that kind of skills are being developed. And it can promote even you, you know, doing certain unlawful things or kind of mysterious things which are not acceptable, not moral things. So, and satani basically means, so, you know, the certain kind of cunning things. So, therefore, the wisdom. So, always has to be, have some kind of a connection between the sealer and you are very much aligning with that. So, sampajano satani na kaira. So, this phrase represent that you are very much aware of what is going on. And within that awareness, you are not allowing this mind to do certain cunning things. So you are always being very much ethical and moral, and you are keeping, I mean, your skills, you are not manipulating to kind of look down the others or take the chance or to highlight yourself and all these things. So that is possible, by the way. I mean, you can, if you are a skillful person, you can take the opportunity, you can misuse the opportunity, you can look down the others and you can highlight yourself. All things are possible because you are maybe an intellectual person, intelligent person. But sampajano satani na kaira. So the sampajano, so with full awareness, so you are looking at the whole situation and you are not promoting that. So that kind of a skill, that kind of a thought arising in you, doing certain kind of a cunning activity, you are not promoting. You may see it. You may see it. The opportunities are available. The possibilities are available. Thoughts may even come. But you are not promoting. You are not implementing. So maintaining such kind of a possibility. So as he mentioned, so how we are maintaining that good, ethical, moral conduct without comparing, say, or without looking down the others and boasting about us. So how are we going to maintain that? So it's very interesting way of putting it. Now, another thing is that, say, if we consider the Sammāditti. So in the Sammāditti, the proper view, so there are two ways actually Buddha put. So the first one is, in a way, the mundane kind of Sammāditti, where first of all, we are understanding, okay, say, whatever the actions that I do have a kind of a repercussion, I have a kind of a result. So I am very much establishing my karma. So karma is my protector, karma is my relation, karma is my refuge. So likewise, a strong belief in that and kind of a thorough understanding in that, so you become kind of a moral, ethical person. So that is necessary. And by the way, interesting point is, he does not stop there. So then he is talking about the supramundane kind of Sammāditti. So that is where he is highlighting anasava, ariya anasava lokuttara magganga. So it is a noble, and it doesn't promote any kind of influxes, anasava, lokuttara, it is supramundane, magganga, it becomes a, what you call, path factor. So, in that respect, so as we are now pointing out, so how we are not, I mean, in that kind of a context, it is not possible to promote a self-view. So, we may be doing a lot of good things, we may be trying to do meditation, but promoting a self is not possible if we are properly established on that second kind of Sammāditti. Because in the second type of Sammāditti, the avijjāsava is something that we need to be very careful. Āsavas in the influxes. So there are typically four āsavas, influxes. So this avijjāsava is something that always giving us a kind of a feeling that I am here, I am here, I am so and so. So this self-view, the self-appropriation, self-referencing, and all these kind of I-created terms, I-highlighted terms, personality-related terms, the individuality-related terms, and all these things are highlighting a self. So that is the one actually promoting kind of a comparison. So I am here and you are there. I am comparing myself. So when that kind of I-making happens within me, a kind of highlighting of a person happens within me, so if we are able to recognize that, so then only you are calming down and again back, you are putting you into the middle path. So then there is no conflict because you are not highlighting as a person. So it's a kind of a, we can say kind of a dhammata, we can say as a kind of a the cause and effect, sort of a relationship is going on. So it's a kind of a process going on. I am not trying to attribute this process to a person. So it's these things are very difficult in a way. So typically, immediately if I am doing something good, so immediately highlighting of I can come. So a self-referencing can come. Comparison can come with myself. Am I better or am I good or am I doing better? Am I the best person? So likewise, always we have that kind of a comparative attitude, promoting the self-view. But if we are trying to achieve thorough understanding, penetrative knowledge, and say non-self, so at that level, so you can't promote this kind of a comparison even. So you may be doing good, but as a kind of an innocent way, not even noticing by the others, you are not going to highlight yourself, but you are doing the best thing. So that's why, there is a significant interest is there in the vipassana. So to recognize this I making, to recognize this mind making, and to the conceit I am. So when this conceit I am going to happen within me, so when I promotion happen, so I am promoting myself as an individual, how this is happening, so that has to be recognized within us. So it is, we can discuss, yes, comparing with others is not good, conceit is not good, looking down the others is not good. So from the ethical level we can understand, yes, that is true, but how to overcome that? So just by mere logical understanding, just by mere ethical referencing, we can try to stop, but still the symptoms are available and still the sources, the causes are still available. So the Buddha points out, so how this I creation happens, how the self-promotion happens, how I making happens. So if you go to that very root and recognize that, so then we may have a better opportunity. So at the very, very rising level, the initiation level, you are trying to recognize it. So then it can't lead to the conceit and the comparison level, because at the very instant that you understood, okay, again the self-view is rising. I'm thinking what I have done in the past, I have done that good, but referencing that, second thought is arising, appreciating that task, now thoughts are arising. For what? Promoting a self. So if I can recognize that, it's a very interesting part. So anyone else? Yeah.
I think that's the one you explained just now is very relating to the story that you told us a few days ago. The three monks were there in a same kuti or same temple or something like that.
Exactly.
And how can I be that I'm not like downgrading the other person, and how can I be like that? I think that story was relating to
that
the...
That is, during the Gosinga Salavana, so three monks are very cordially living, and Venerable Ananda, Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Kimbila, and Venerable Ananda, I think. So they three are living with a very cordial heart, appreciating each other, and one interesting, exceptional thought happens each one of them is, may I live according to others' wishes? So it is not that I want to live according to my own way of thinking. So let me live according to the others' wishes, the others' way of looking at things. So I have become no one then, basically. Interesting thing is, it is not that just one person is thinking like that, and so he become very much like the servant of the others. It is not that. Rather, it happens in a very, very higher level. So each one is think like in that. So then, what a kind of a blend they are in. No, kind of a unity. Yeah, exactly. Unity, the trust. So trusting, and you are giving up your whole individuality, and you are becoming no one. So please tell me how I need to work, how I need to eat, or whatever. So very interesting.
Exactly the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. So very interesting how these noble people, how now they are understanding that this kind of a self-promotion can happen, conceit can happen. So how I can, in a way, say, in a skillful way, how I can promote that non-self promote the unity, the peace the among us. So how I can promote that? So then typically what happens is, if I have a good idea, so I want to promote that idea. So by highlighting that idea, I am promoting a self. So my idea is the best idea. Your idea is the wrong idea. Or your idea is inferior idea. My idea is the superior idea. So I am fighting for my idea, but ultimately I am fighting for a person, an individual. So, and all these things can lead to kind of a disparaging others and looking down others and highlighting myself. All are self-view in a way. But understanding there is no self and all, I mean, non-self and all these things. So we may be coming to a very, I mean, very interesting way of living, an art of living, without comparing. I mean, this mana anyway is a very subtle defilement. We can't immediately overcome that. But recognizing that and not promoting it and not being sort of victimized to that, and so that others also get into trouble if I try to highlight myself too much and looking down the others because of my own conceit, so the others are also in big trouble. So not putting that kind of a situation, how about you are managing? How about you are maintaining kind of a ethical and all this some way of, a better way of harmonizing each one? So this is a you can't have a kind of fixed line. I mean, this is the only way of doing it. That there are, when things are happening in many different ways, at that level, you have to have a kind of proper judgment, proper decision making and all these things. So you are managing it as it happens, as it comes. So these are a few things I have. Yeah, Tim, you have anything to mention?
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
I was just letting that sink a bit because I appreciate very, very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
And my thought was about that before, that it's quite clear in the first place why we put down others, lifting ourselves. For the mind, it's quite comfortable, feels good, powerful. Mm. So like a nice feeling in the first place. And then I find it interesting and very valuable to notice a bit more subtle when you're coming from a calm or peaceful state, that it's then not something uplifting but something disturbing actually to put somebody else down and to experience that it's an interruption of own calm and peacefulness was interesting and valuable to me. And then third place, astonishing how even though knowing that, experiencing that, still keep on doing it. It still comes back in quite, as you
can't
said,
stop.
Yeah, as you said before, in every little situation, every ridiculous circumstance, it can be so strong still. Yeah.
I mean, to that level, I mean, this influence coming within us is so powerful. I mean, even though we now mindfully understand it is, I mean, it's not something better to implement. I want to let it go. Still, the influence coming is so powerful. With that momentum, I am just still doing it. But the interesting point is, I am mindful about it at least. So that mindfulness is, and in a way, later, slowly, slowly, you may be able to recognize this particular thought at its very inception. So then you may be in a better position to little bit calm down, relax, recognize and let it go rather than implementing it. But if you are able to notice it only when it has overwhelmed the mind, it's too late. Very interesting. I mean, openly discussing these things. These are all human nature. I mean, it's not that we all are any kind of a special people. So as he mentioned, everyone has their own distinct features. So we can recognize that, appreciate the good things.
So again, I'd come back to this point that speech is very parallel to the nature of the mind. So learning to watch our own speech, first the external speech, what we say to others, and then the internal monologue, the internal speech that we're talking to ourselves. And if we can straighten that speech out, we are doing a lot to not live in this deceptive way of life. And then also that if that speech is not harsh and critical, and that we diffuse that speech. Sometimes it's we have to kind of be soothing in how we talk to ourselves, and other times we need like right view and right attitude, as to substitute the wrong idea that we have, the wrong theme, the wrong story that we're telling ourselves with a more correct story or a more useful speech. And then also the importance of the environment, that we avoid situations where deceptive behavior, deceptive speech is you could say necessary. And then also that we are careful of the environment of where we're we have to act holy. We behave in a kind of a good behavior because we're conscious of how others will look at us. But we're sort of in a performance mode rather than a natural mode. I remember I was at a Katina ceremony, and it was really going on a long time. You know, this was in Burma. And there was a long rows of monks, you know. So I was sitting I was a junior monk, so I was sitting in the fifth or sixth row back. And there was another person beside me, and he was kind of sleeping. And another monk was complaining, saying, "Why is that fellow sleeping?" And I said, "Well, he's actually relaxed, you know. Whereas you're getting tired because you're kind of." Getting very, you want to look very proper at the ceremony, whereas this other guy is relaxed and he's kind of going to sleep here, you know. So I'm often jealous of people who can be like, if I'm in a public situation, I can never relax 100%, you know.
Kind of anxiety, little bit.
Yeah, and what are other people thinking of me? So I'm just saying that there are so many ways that in this verse, this inner monologue, this inner speech, are picking up on those self-deceptive things. It becomes more and more subtle a game. And I've made that an act of my own mindfulness. It's like, so sometimes you might wonder, what am I doing with myself all the time? I'm watching that inner speech, and certainly when I'm moving into situations, like one situation is airports. Like, I found airports are really, really anxious places for everybody, the staff, the security, the passengers, the people, the family, or whoever have come with the passengers, the announcements, everything is really heightening and heightening and heightening. And it can be a very long period of time that this is going on. So people are really going kind of crazy. So I know I have to be super careful and very, very careful. So I'm extremely busy at an airport, like internally. It's very strange. I get stopped a lot by security. The more I practice this, the more I get stopped. And
stopped for what?
Yeah, exactly. I thought it's my theory is that I look like a very, like, for the security guards, I'm a very easy person that they want to check, you know, because I'm just very relaxed, so they have a quota of people to check, so they have to be seen by their supervisors that they're checking somebody. So they want to check the easiest person, not the difficult person. So they'll always ask me.
So their count will increase.
Sir, would you mind if I, with the magic wand, they're wiping around you and chemical tests, you know, and all this kind of thing, and I'm like. No problem. Another time I was visiting a prisoner in jail, and we had a lineup. We had to all line up, and then they would have the sniffer dogs. And, you know, actually the guards liked to see if they could get a reaction from people. And one of the guards came over to me, and he said, "You didn't even blink."
Blink.
I didn't even blink, you know, because they were actually trying to provoke everybody. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. You know, like it wasn't that I just don't care, because I know it's a very anxious situation, and I know.
Well prepared.
I don't care about their provocations, because I'm so busy with my own internal, like taking care of my own speech, my own self-criticism, my own judgment, that's what I'm in. I don't even care about what they're, like Dhammajiva would say, none of my business. What they're doing, none of my business. That they're trying to provoke the girls and see if they can get a fright out of somebody, or it's none of my business. So it's the same with these security guards in the airports checking me, like, do they think I'm a terrorist, or, you know, what is it? Is this, you know, why are they checking me so much? It's none of my business. I'm just like, my business is how I'm handling particularly this aspect of shame and judgment, and I'm superior, I'm inferior, and that's all I'm looking at. Like, because in such a strong situation for me, it's not, of course, like standing, my standing posture and the contact with the ground is very important, or the breathing, but also just that sheer, like it's like a python where I'm being squeezed by shame and I'm just listening to it. Like, you know, if this is coming back to what you were saying, like, how can we distinguish between the extremes, or between, you know, how can we find this middle way? It's by actually back and forth between these extremes. Like where I feel judged, or I feel superior, I feel less than, I feel inferior. Like, and just realize that that's happening very quickly in the mind.
Shall we go to the next verse also then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Will I read it in English and you read it in Sinhalese, on Pali?
Yeah.
Okay. So when provoked, having heard many words from ascetics who speak profusely, he does not respond to them harshly, for the good do not retaliate.
Okay, the Pali verse. Sutva rusito bahung vachang samananang puthu vachananang parusena ne na pativajja nahi santo patisenin karunti. Sutva rusito bahung vachang samananang puthu vachananang parusena ne na pativajja nahi santo patisenin karunti. The Sinhala verse. Sinhala meaning, Behari mahanunge ho shatriyadinge anitivu boho bas asa getune ralu basin ounta perala nokianne ragadi kelis sansindu uo pratipaksha bhavaya nokeret mai. So, I mean, as per the Sinhala translation, so whoever the outside monks, other monks and the shastriyas, he can put it to the lay people. So if they are putting certain critical and condemning words, criticizing words, and many noisy things, nonsense in a way, but you are not reacting with harsh words, and you being able to calm down the internal defilements, and nahi santo patisening karoti, and you are not taking revenge in a way. So can you repeat this English translation again?
When provoked, having heard many words from ascetics who speak profusely, he should not respond to them harshly, for the good do not retaliate.
So the good could not retaliate, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is one Dhammapada verse, very interesting Dhammapada verse. It didn't come. I'll put it later. So, because others can criticize, others can put various words. Naparesang vilomani, naparesang kata katang, attano avekhiya katani akatani. So, what you have told, and all these things, naparesang vilomani, naparesang kata katang. So, you are not interested about that, but you are interested what you have done. What's the way that you are thinking, what the way you are doing. So that is what you are more interested about. So the very much like an introvert attitude. So as you said, while the others are watching and try to create a situation, you are not, it's not my business, it's my own. So how am I doing right now? What's the situation going on within me? So kind of an internal, kind of an introspection going on. So this introspective attitude is something very interesting, and so if we are more promoting that, so certain dislike happening within us, maybe a little hate happening within us, resentful thoughts happening within us, so we'd be able to recognize at their very early stage, so that So we would be able to implement this verse. So others are trying to criticize, others are trying to put you in trouble, but you appear like calm, you appear like relaxed. So you are able to maintain your demeanor. So you are not being frustrated, you are not being agitated. So how are we going to maintain our peaceful mind? So, I mean, these are not easy things. I mean, we can talk, but when we are in real situation, isn't it? I mean, we can talk, actually. We can talk about very intellectual as well as very high-minded kind of states. But when we ourselves are in that kind of a situation, are we able to maintain ourselves? Are we able to maintain the peace of mind, even when things are troublesome? Even when others are finding fault with you, am I able to calm, relax? So without immediately reacting and criticizing and getting into harsh words, so am I able to carefully, mindfully guard my senses in a way? So these are very practical. Very, very practical. So when now we can talk, we can talk high about it, but when we ourselves are in such kind of situation, so how are we going to practically maintain that? So we all have such opportunities. So maybe, as you said, maybe at an airport, while at the Pindapatha, while at the Dhanasala, while at the meditation hall, because we are dealing with many different people. So they have their own different characteristics. There are distinctions. So we are not, two persons are not identical. So we have certain distinctions, differences. So when these differences are being noticed, am I able to sort of look, calm down myself without, as the previous one say, without thinking that I am superior or he is inferior or equal or whatever the other way, or agitated with the agitated mind, I am going to talk louder or criticize, or I am going to provoke, or I am also using the harsh words, or am I able to accept and have some kind of maybe self-compassion, and again the self-compassion towards the other person, and accepting the situation. Okay, this is the way it is. So people are different. Accepting that difference, isn't it? Accepting these differences. Okay, he's different. Okay, doesn't matter. So that accepting that difference, so that I can be live peacefully, and again having different opinions and still living peacefully. I mean, we can't come to the same opinion within a meeting or within a companionship. How can we come to the same idea, same very equal kind of way of looking at things? So we may look at things many different ways, but still maintaining kind of a harmony. I mean, these things are very, very challenging situations, very, very challenging. Sutta arusito bahung vachang samananang putu vachananang. So it's very good to our Dhanasala. Parusena nena pativajja. Nahi santo patisenin karanti. So he is not taking any revenge. He is not. What's the last translation? The last sentence?
Yeah, for the good, do not retaliate.
Retaliate, yeah. Not retaliate. Not taking the revenge, or not retaliating.
Yeah. So this is a victory. So I think we have to, whenever we experience these situations and when we tackle them reasonably well, it becomes a game. Can I improve on this time after time after time? And especially in a situation where it's repetitive, where it's fairly consistently I'll run into that problem, then that's a great area for working. Like I just mentioned about the airport, I was very astonished at the extent of how perfect a squeezing point this airport is, and how stressed out people are getting and why they're behaving in such an extreme way at times. But there can be other choking points in our life. It could be, you're dropping your kid off at school and you see the other mothers and you're judging yourself. You see it with children's sports games where the parents are screaming at the referee or they're screaming at the kids. And it's they're completely nuts. You have to say to them, this is not the way to behave. like because they've lost that self awareness of themselves, or you see it at political part, you know, political action or political rallies, or but it could be just ordinary action, like if you're at the shop and every day, you know, there's always like look out for these areas in your life where this where you're getting provoked and you're responding harshly, and that you find a way to not retaliate. So, and give yourself points, you know, like okay, I can try that again tomorrow, because it's going to be the same situation again, as you mentioned, Pindapat or something like that. It's every day. And this, where it's not super unusual, like it's where it becomes every day, then we can be like Seleka, like slowly removing this defilement.
So how now, I'm putting a different, I mean, just to get some for more ideas. Now when we are doing like that, if someone else, an outsider, if they have the perspective, okay, he's just a timid person, he's just a fool, he's not brave enough, I mean, so what is the kind of way of handling that? So are we going to show that we can't do anything, I'm helpless, I'm timid? So is it the what we are trying to promote, or while seeing the situation, I am well prepared, and am I giving any kind of message to the other person, or am I just always okay? Feel like not. I'm just putting these words for the conversation. So am I feel defeated on that situation, or am I handling myself properly? Okay, in a way, defeated in the sense when the other person is abusing, other person is sort of using harsh words. So am I being feeling defeated and, you know, cracked and all this lost situation, or am I full aware of what is going on? I'm standing properly, fully aware of the whole situation, but not reacting. So kind of message can be given even that way. So you can feel defeated, and the other person may feel, okay, he is a timid person. So that is one option. The other thing is, he's not reacting, but he's fully aware, isn't it? I mean, he's fully aware. Like, you know, this very old story that when King Sakka won the battle, and this the Vepachitti being carried to the Sudhamma, the assembly hall. At that time, the Asura king, the Vepachitti, is using the abusive words. And now Sakka is not reacting. He is not using any harsh words. He is just going to the whatever the place. And the other celestial beings, other deities, are asking, why majesty, you are not reacting, for this fool is now criticizing you. Why you are not taking any kind of a stand? So he is saying, okay, so he is in the bad situation. He is in the real lower situation. Being that level, he is criticizing me. But I am the victor. I am really in the powerful position. But I am not taking revenge on him. So I am giving a kind of a different kind of a message to that audience. Being powerful, but you are not reacting. But you are standing well. You are not really, you know, timid and putting that kind of a message either. But you are strongly being aware of the whole situation, but not reacting. So, I mean, these are very interesting points that even here, I mean, in this verse, so one can think, okay, this person, I can blame anything, I can tell anything, or he don't care, he's just a timid, he's a fool, always taking the defeat. So I don't think that we have to give that attitude also. So other person, if he's reacting and all these things, but I am standing properly. I mean, it's not that I am showing any proud or angry mood or something like that. Maybe responding in a, I don't know, maybe the middle way.
No, that is the challenge, to respond in the middle way. Mm. Because whenever we're in a difficult situation, we always move into this black and white. Like, you're wrong and I'm right. And we take sides. So maybe it's a bully, and that bully is putting another person down or putting yourself down. So like you feel like, oh, I don't deserve this criticism. If I go back to the verse here, the verse is, having heard many words from ascetics who speak profusely, when provoked by them, he does not respond harshly. So you can just say, oh, that's harsh. You know, they're putting me down. So it's very simple, like I'm good, they're bad. You know, so we always do this, especially in a difficult situation. You know, like I said, it's very simple. No matter how complicated the situation is, we make it simple, black and white. I'm good, he's bad. You know, Putin has invaded Ukraine, he's bad. The rest of the world, good. It's like, wow, this is a really complicated situation. It's not trivial. And now we've reduced it to black, white. And so I think...
Black is good, huh?
Who knows? If you're ISIS, black is good. Yes, if you're ISIS. If you're Sinhalese nationalist, you have to wear white. No, absolutely have to wear white. So the bhikkhus are wearing brown. Like that's strange. So firstly is like that ability of mindfulness to take a breath. If you have a lot of practice as a mindfulness, you can self calm in a difficult situation. You can put your mind on the breath rather than on the harsh speech. And then you can say, acknowledge, okay, this is difficult. This is very harsh. And I feel very angry. I feel provoked by them. And I'm not going to retaliate. But it's more like opening the heart for the other possibilities, like you mentioned with King Saka. Of course, he's the righteous victor. And the other guy is a loser, and he's a bad-mouthed, you know, loser. It's very black and white situation, and everybody else is going, yeah, you know, we can really kick this guy now, you know, we're going to really shame him and bring him in front of everybody else, and you know, and Saka is like, no, there's other possibilities. And that's where I find opening up to wisdom is fantastic. Where, like, I don't know what wisdom is going to do, but I'm going to give it the chance. I'm going to invite wisdom in, and I'm not reacting
impulsively,
not just to the harsh speech, but to the black and the white. Mm-hmm. I'm right, you're wrong. You know, and that's really interesting, is when you can open to the potentiality of wisdom, because... then at least you have the opportunity for the most skillful, the most wisest, behavior or action in that time.
And the other thing is, now when another person is abusing and retaliating and all these things are there, so in a way he is releasing his whatever the anger and all these things. So if you are being little patient so that he release whole thing, and then you stand up in a way. Stand up doesn't mean that you are reacting, but you are in a more confident and more peaceful way. If you can handle that situation, then you are giving a strong message. Now, like another thought occurred to me, you know, there is one Brahmin coming and abusing the Buddha, and he's blaming. And so Buddha was peaceful, and at the end of the thing, so he asked, have you finished? Yes. Yes, I'm finished. Then he's asking, so what's happening if you are getting certain guests to your house and you are preparing so much of delicacies and all the food and all these things, and he's telling, okay, I'm preparing all these things. So what happened if they are not coming on that day? So now you prepared everything, and your wife and you are there, and you prepared the whole thing for the guests, but they didn't come. So what are you going to do? So then, you know, we can't waste the food. We myself and my wife start going to eat it. So similarly, so you have abused me, you have told so many things, but I am not accepting any of this. So you have to use it by yourself. So likewise, you are simply reflecting and you are giving it to himself. You are not accepting anything, but when he is talking like that, he was maintaining his mind peacefully, not reacting. So likewise, allowing that person to release this whole tension, in a way you are being a passage at that level. But later, once he comes down, you are saying, well, I'm not accepting. I mean, this is not really, really pointing to me. So I'm not, I haven't done that maybe. But at that time, that person being, you know, overreacted and, you know, used harsh words and all these, help him also to calm down, and he also now a little relaxed because he has used harsh words. So his tension also has now reduced. He may be in a better position to communicate right now. So immediately if we start reacting, then we both get into heated arguments. But another way is like we allow him to talk, maybe blame. But later when he calms down, okay, now I'm telling you, I'm not the one who did it. So whatever the abuse that you are putting to me, it's useless, baseless. So that is another way of doing it. Maybe again the middle path in a way.
Like the black and the white is often very obvious. It's kind of very obvious, whereas wisdom is very surprising. And like it's have these small victories and like get into the game. Like that's what I find is very interesting. Like I've had many examples come to my mind. Like once I got scolded by like literally the same like in the previous verse, I got scolded by a senior monk. He gave a 3-hour desana to me on the virtues, the 10 virtues of a samanera, and I wasn't a samanera, I was a taro. You know, so he spent 3 hours scolding me about the qualities of a good samanera, not even of a bhikkhu. He wasn't acknowledging me as a bhikkhu. You know, and because I was a different, you know, different culture, different like, so he was treating me with real contempt. That you know, you pseudo people, you have no idea of how Buddhism is, and I'm going to explain the basics to you. And he spent 3 hours scolding me, and I was listening very intently the whole time. And we had similar teachers in the past. So a lot of what he was saying was exactly what his teachers and my same teachers would say. So I was listening to my teachers talking through him, but not with the barb, not with the twist that this fellow had. And so I was, it was a very strange experience of listening to myself, listening to our teachers' teachers talking. And so I was listening in real depth, really. But at the same time, I knew he had a venom towards me. And, you know, at the end, I said, okay, so, you know, he said, you listened very well. And I said, yeah, I did. I said, yeah, you had a lot to say. And like I was surprised with myself. I'm not, you know, I'm just giving you this as a literal experience in my life. It was very strange of like taking these teachings and just applying it. Like I don't come from a Buddhist family or community or culture. Like my family are Irish, and they're Catholic, and they're farming and so forth. Like even sometimes with Dhammajiva, like I'll argue with him. Like he likes to boast that he's from a village. He's a bumpkin from a village. And I'm like, man, you should see where I'm from. I'm not even close to the village. You know, like this is like the middle of nowhere. You're like next to Peridinia Botanical Gardens. This is like super posh. You know?
Closer to the tooth relic.
Yeah. You know, next to Peridinia University. You'd walk down the road for your undergraduate and your master's. What the hell are you talking about? You're a bumpkin. You know, this is ridiculous. You should see where I'm from. It's like hundreds of miles from the university. You know, it's like I have to walk several miles to the crossroad where the village, in air quotes, village is. It's not even a village if you don't pay attention, you won't notice that this is a village. You know, like here we talk about Mitrigala as a village. There's loads of houses. I'm from like no houses. You know, it's like this is bumpkin where I'm from. And he's looking at me, you know, like you're not a bumpkin. And I goes, no, I'm really a bumpkin. You're not a bumpkin. I know you. I've been to your village, you know. But I'm just saying like... You know, people can speak provocatively, and it's what we do with it. And like, that's where I take, you know, I always took the Buddha very seriously. Like, this is like a manual in my life. It's not just poetic verses. And I really try to put this into my life, and I call it gamify it. I like try to play with it all the time and get it. You know, I don't win. You know, it's like a very difficult game. I lose most of the time. Most of the time, I'll get annoyed by somebody. Somebody will say something to me, and I react. Like Dhammajiva is an expert. He loves getting my reaction. Dhammajiva loves getting a reaction from me. You know, he'll be trying and trying and trying for days, and he'll find something that annoys me. And you know,
it's a good exercise.
Yeah, he's really expert. Like he knows. Like if he's. You know, you English fellows, like, and it's very annoying for Irish to be thrown into the English camp. You know, it's like saying to Sri Lankans, you Indian fellows. You know, it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, we're not Indians. Like the same with us Irish. He said to me recently, he was going on recently, the things that you English did to us here in Sri Lanka. I said, what the hell are you talking about? I said, have you any idea what the English did to the Irish? I found recently a history professor talking about a particularly devastating period of Irish history. It's horrific, genocidal, just terrible. To this day, like Oliver Cromwell is like, we spit if you say this guy's name. You know, he was the king. He was like the ruler of England in the 1640s. You know, like they were having peace negotiations with the English for this 25 years ago for Northern Ireland. And the Irish Prime Minister, he was meeting the English Prime Minister in their office in England. And he said, look, I have a special request. Can you take down the portrait of Oliver Cromwell when I'm in this room? We cannot have a peace discussion if this guy's picture is on the wall. Like, even after 400 years, you know, this guy is annoying to us, you know. And they had to take down the portrait of Oliver Cromwell for this whole time because it was just not acceptable. Like, it was a small request from the Irish government, this guy's portrait, take. All of them have murdered us, but this guy in particular, his picture has to be taken away. We can't discuss peace if this guy is in the room. So, but I'm just saying to you, it's a game. How can I manage this difficult, this painful situation? And
so in a way, a lesson, no? Yeah.
And put myself in the perspective of the other people, you know, and what was driving them, you know? Like I find that here, you know, with the whole civil war, you know, for 30 years, and I really feel a deep pain, a deep empathy. You know, I don't take it for granted. People will tell me, oh, you know, things are terrible here in Sri Lanka at the moment. And I'm like, no, they're not. This is not terrible. I've seen terrible. This is not terrible, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I'm enjoying it. This is good. This is not bad, you know. And so, you know, it's amazing how this victory of harsh speech and things that annoy us, if we can have that patience, that calmness, it's a great, great victory, you know. And this gives me great confidence in the Buddha Dhamma, you know. It's, you take the guidebook. This isn't poetry. This isn't philosophical. If you apply this in your life, then you can get a tremendous benefit. And you will lose. But every now and again, you'll have a small victory. And like, oh, okay, there's the victory. There's the small victory. And you hear this great thing about Sakka, you know, oh, that's great. You know, that's very heroic. You know, it's like Marvel Comics. But in your own life, it's like, wow, I didn't get annoyed with Dhammajiva poking me again about being English or something like that, you know. I get every day. I'll get it from him every day. You bloody English people. Like, I'm like, what the hell are you on about?
So that's a victory for you. Yeah, exactly. Okay, then. Actually, we have spent almost 1 hour and 15 minutes. So I think we have spent a fair amount of time. Now the time has come to wrap up the session. I think we have completed 2 verses and maybe only 2 more verses are available. So maybe we'll discuss that next week. So with that, we'll conclude today's Dhamma discussion, and I like one of you to do the transferring of merit. Yeah, you may do it.
Sadhu, 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 Taro, for teaching us today, and for Junior Taro for teaching us, making these Dhamma verses alive, and so we can relate to them in our own practice. And thank you so much, and wish to give these merits to all beings, and we'll recite the usual verses.